Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. We're talking about the decline of the industrial Midwest on this morning's show. Before the break, we learned about where Detroit was just as things started to go wrong there. Other cities, such as Milwaukee, have fared better over the years. The photography of Eric Holubow reminds us, though, that not everything about urban decline is ugly. Holubow, who lives in Chicago, has taken some truly remarkable pictures of buildings that have gone unoccupied for years, sometimes decades. Among them are some stunning pictures of Milwaukee's Schlitz Brewhouse, which was torn down in 2013. Many of his most compelling pictures are collected in a new book called Abandoned, America's Vanishing Landscape. And Eric Holubow joined us in the studio recently. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So landscape photographers just need to have access to a scenic vista, which, you know, in many cases is open to anyone. But you take pictures of places like the now gone Schlitz Brewery or an abandoned hospital in Chicago or a condemned hotel in Detroit. How do you get access to places like those?
Some places are very welcoming, and those places are few and far between. I will always try to contact somebody before going in. I think after – maybe at first I wouldn't, but now it's kind of – I realize, you know, it's just so much easier to kind of ask, and maybe you'd be surprised at what people say. So I'll ask, and some places you'll see that are owned by, like, the city of, you know, wherever. Like Bridgeport owns a couple beautiful theaters in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and they let me come in. And so if you ask, you can go in. Other times, there's really no one to contact, and they really don't make it very easy to kind of, you know, dial them up. So, you know, I'll try that avenue, and if not, I'll look for an opening, like literally an opening, whether that be a window. And actually, the Schlitz, it was just an open door. It was insane. It was just a door that at one point did have, I think, a lock, but had been long broken. And so I just opened the door.
How much do you know about what a place will look like before you go in?
I would say it's pretty much a mystery to me, and that's why I enjoy it so much, because you don't know what you're going to get. Like, the genre of photography is often referred to as urban exploration, and there's a side of kind of discovery, which is – that's the thrilling part, which is you don't know what's going to be inside. Now, sometimes if a place has been entered before and someone else has photographed it, then I'll have a sense from that.
But you're not looking at, like, archival photography of, say, the Schlitz Brewery or wherever and saying, well, that's what it looked like when it was working. I wonder what it's going to look like now.
Occasionally I'll see something. I won't have researched fully a place before going in. I'll kind of do a lot of the research, you know, post-visit. So I'll kind of understand a little bit more about what the process was. But no, I don't typically plan it out where I'm seeing what the place is and trying to see how much has changed. It's pretty evident kind of how much has changed once you're inside.
Are there things in particular that you're really hoping to find when you go someplace, when you make it inside?
It depends on the type of building, right? So if it's a church or a place of worship, I really love kind of the stained glass. Like, I love seeing that, because a lot of times that will have either been broken or removed, which is, you know, good because it's been safekeeping. But, like, I like seeing the stained glass just because it just adds to the, you know, allure and the beauty of the place. A place like Schlitz, I want to see everything kind of intact. And when I say that, like, there's other people who want to go into these buildings, and they don't always have, you know, photographic things on their minds. Like, they're really looking to kind of scrap the place and take it for what it's worth. So I really don't want to see a place kind of torn apart by that.
Well, and we've been talking about the Schlitz photos, and obviously this is radio, so people can't see them. But the thing that really strikes you about the inside of the Schlitz Brewery, or at least it struck me, is like the ornate staircases that exist in the place.
Oh, absolutely. It is, you know, it was one of these places that you just are in awe that it was built to such grandeur. And, you know, I call a particular image in that series the Schlitz Sanctuary, because there is kind of, you know, people build religious institutions to kind of be reflective of God and what, you know, they imagine, you know, would please him or her. And I feel like that same kind of care and consideration went to building the Schlitz Brewery, because it was magnificent. And seeing these kind of ornate ironwork that kind of went through these staircases, that it must have been a marvel to come into work each day and to make beer. Like, really, you go into other breweries these days, and they're not like, you know, they're not bad, but no one's putting that much money into just the railings of these places. And it was just amazing to see how much care and worth people put into the beer.
Well, and I was struck in many of these pictures by how much sunlight was coming in through the windows. But then it dawned on me that you really do need natural light to make these pictures work because the power's not on in most of them,
I would imagine. Yeah, most of the places, yeah. I would say there's a weird, rare times when there might be power.
But, do you try to throw a switch when you walk in?
Yeah. No, I do. And I've actually, 98% of the time, haven't been surprised. But sometimes I'll be surprised until they will turn on. Schlitz Brewery was wonderfully adorned with this skylight. It is a huge skylight that's spanned the entire length of the brewery. So it was awash with light.
For as long as you've been taking these pictures and as many places as you've visited, does it still amaze you how much is left behind in these places?
Oh, my gosh. There's times when I wonder, if anybody bothered to turn off the lights. There are books and books and books I would see in schools where they're just, stacked up. And it's a perfectly, perfectly good books and that people would just leave them stacked up. Or you'd see, offices that it seems like nothing was even kind of packed up before they left. So sometimes you're kind of seeing kind of almost the haste in which things close, like the surprise of which these things shutter. It's a little alarming to see that.
There's a Chicago area hotel, I think it was called the Purple Hotel, that was originally a Hyatt. And, the two things that struck me were, A, how much it still looked like a hotel. They didn't, take stuff off the walls. And two, how recently it was built, which, a lot of these buildings, turn of the last century, but this is the 1960s.
Yeah, that place was interesting because – to your point, they have this lounge that was just adorned with law textbooks. It was just all these law textbooks in this really swanky, at one point, I'm sure, lounge. It had this crushed velvet curtains and this kind of like Merlot rug. And they had these kind of awesome benches or couches. And it was just a beautiful place. And it was probably built, in the 60s. And it really... it fell down pretty fast. And you'll see those places, honestly, I tend not to get super excited by because I like the kind of architecture of older places. But this also had some gems just because it was this kind of period piece of this kind of swanky time that was kind of cool. It had some gangster history to it. And there was a few murders, I think, that happened in there. So even this kind of relatively newer building had a bit of history with it. So, it was a beautiful, beautiful place in certain ways, not in the traditional sense, but there was something stylistically just so unique about it.
I was also really struck by the pictures of I can't remember the name of the hospital in the Chicago area, but it was where Hillary Rodham Clinton was born.
Yeah, the Edgewater Hospital, Edgewater Medical Center in Edgewater, and it was it was home to a few people's births. I think Hillary Clinton. I think serial killer?
Was it Gacy? Yeah,
Gacy was there. And actually, that place just got demoed, I'd say, in the last 3 months. I was there this summer kind of mid-demo, actually, because as they're demoing it, it gets easier to access. So I went back in for a couple shots, actually took a buddy who was interested in going to that place. I took him in, an out-of-towner, which actually isn't that unique. I actually typically bring people who are from all over the country, world actually. I've taken people all over the world kind of on tours of Chicago because I'm kind of that resident photographer in Chicago, and all I'll ask for is that reciprocity when I go to their town. So yeah, I went there recently, and it's a cool hospital, and actually it's one of the few places that has
Hyperbaric chambers.
Hyperbaric,
yeah.
Thank you. The hyperbaric chamber because it's so close to the lakefront and for scuba divers, because everybody likes scuba diving in Lake Michigan, if they had the bends, they would go to the hyperbaric chamber and they would kind of be repressurized. So it was kind of a cool feature of the hospital. And the hospital actually underwent a little bit of, sensational news a couple years ago because there was other people who were getting in the building, right? Like I said, I'm not alone in this passion. And they saw all these medical records that were just left there because the hospital actually was closed under kind of it was I think fraud. There was embezzling happening, and so it kind of just closed all of a sudden. Another example, just like all of a sudden it closes one day and no one's allowed to go in, and it just had all these medical records sitting out, and a lot of people were kind of in shock that they were just kind of sitting out there. So there could have been in Hillary's, her birth records. Who knows? So.
Well, and you mentioned that you are not the only person that's interested in this stuff, but do you claim any moral high ground in what you do when you go in to take pictures of an abandoned building versus what anybody else might want to do when they explore an abandoned building?
Yeah, it's interesting because
– I mean, it's like wreck diving in a way.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously I don't want people to see what I do and get inspired to the point where they're putting their lives at risk. But I do hope people get inspired to kind of look at the world differently and kind of go look at things that maybe other people aren't paying attention to. That's a little bit of the, you know, moral of my work is I want people to see places that they tend not to go see. But, you know, there is also a side where people don't want other people going in these places, not only because of their safety, but because there seems to be some kind of possessiveness that happens with these sites, that certain people who go into them feel like no one else should go in. You know, it's just kind of mine, and I feel kind of important that I only know about it or I'm the only one in these places. And my philosophy is not that. My philosophy is there is a story behind these places, and that story should be shared. So, you know, when I've shared these photos online, I've been, you know, reached out to by people who maybe have been affected by these places, who went to school in these places, who gave birth to their children in these places, and they want to know more. And they're thankful that they see the place in this state and they can't believe it. And if there's something that they can do about it, all the better. So if I'm able to raise awareness about the state of these places and if people want to get involved, that's great. But, yeah, people are doing things that, risky and going to, you know, harm themselves. Yeah, don't do that. But, you know, I'm not responsible for those decisions. But, you know, just know that I always, 98% of the time, I apologize to my wife, but I almost always go with someone. There are times when it's just infeasible and I'll just go into a place. But it's always good to kind of follow that buddy system, right, like they taught you. You know, don't go swimming alone. So
again, like wreck diving.
Exactly, exactly. It all goes back to wreck diving. It's very similar, right? And you know, there's other tools that wreck divers use to kind of find these places. We have our own tools. But no, really, don't go alone because, you know, it is dangerous. Like, these places are closed for a reason. They don't want you going into them because, you know, you can hurt yourself. They're not up to code. And also, people don't want to get in trouble if you injure yourself and they don't want to be liable. So there's also that side of it, which is another reason why I try to kind of get permission, and I carry my own kind of insurance so that if I do get hurt, I'm not going to sue people so they feel better about letting me in. But, yeah, I take a lot of precautions and kind of prepare where I can. And I, you know, don't think people should do anything that is, you know, at all a little riskier without a little bit of preparation.
Well, right. I was going to say preparation sounds like the key because as you describe this, none of this stuff sounds like it's undertaken spontaneously.
Well, I will say there was a big part of me early on, which I would do the, like I like to call the broken windows theory, which is I'll just drive around and if I see a place that looks like it's got broken windows and, you know, I'm going to guess it's abandoned, and then pretty often I'm right. So, you know, I would go to like towns like Cleveland where I might have a couple of places in mind, but then I'll just drive around. And so that's pretty inefficient, but it's also pretty effective if you do find a place. But there are other means, like you could see demo hold lists or places that are kind of owned and operated by the city, you know, places that are, you know, back on their taxes and all these other things that you can kind of see these lists, like preservation lists. Like that's a wonderful resource because not only should they publish about these things so that, you know, it's not for me, but it's for really to kind of get people to want to get involved and try to save these places if they're worth saving, which often they are. But I'm not going to pretend that some places are so dangerous that they really should be torn down. So I'm not one to say everything is so precious that it always needs to be saved because sometimes they're just so far gone that it's almost better to be a new use, right? So I'm happy to see that. I was a little sad to see Schlitz go, though. That was it was such a magnificent place. But, yeah.
Do you get emails from people saying, hey, what about this building? Hey, what about, you know, like there's this amazing building that I've never been in my neighborhood or in my city. Why don't you come and check it out for me?
Yeah, I would love more of those. But yes, I've definitely gotten those. There was an awesome church I had been trying to get into for a few years in Chicago. I had been contacting the Archdiocese and they didn't get back to me. But I've been trying to get into that place. And all of a sudden, one day, I get a phone call from someone who's like, hey, it's being demoed right now. It'll probably be gone in 2 days. And it was. And it was only demoed, I think the whole demo took 3 days. It was an amazingly fast demo. So I swooped in there really quickly and was fortunate enough to get some shots. It's hilarious because people say, I saw this horrible looking building and thought of you. So I do kind of have these strange associations in people's minds, but I'll take it.
Well, it's terrific stuff. And Eric Holubow, thanks so much for spending some time with us.
Mitch, thanks so much. This has been awesome.
This is my town, out in the Rustville fields. We were banging out Buicks and Oldsmobiles. There was always a job.
Eric Holubow is an urban exploration photographer based in Chicago. His recent book is called Abandoned, America's Vanishing Landscape, and you can see several images from it at WUWM.com. Amos Kennedy is drawn to the industrial landscape of Detroit to make his art. He's a printmaker, and we'll find out why Detroit is the best place for him to work when Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. First, though, Maine singer-songwriter Slade Cleaves takes us out of this segment. This is from his Lake Effect session. It's a song called Rust Belt Fields.
No one remembers your name just for working hard. Drove into the ground till your factory's cold, and they tear it all down, and the parts get sold. Come the bankers now, picking over the board.